Now, summarize the fundamental question that's being asked here.
So the federal constitution limits the kinds of disputes that federal courts can hear. And Article 3 of the Constitution limits the federal courts to resolving only cases or controversies. So, for example, as a law professor, there's lots of things I might think about in the world, and I might want a legal answer. Here's a good question, a good example. A lot of us in the legal academy may want a good answer to the question of whether President Obama could have invoked the 14th Amendment to resolve the debt ceiling impasse if it had come to that. But just because you want a question resolved doesn't mean that courts can give you an answer. So in the federal courts, there's developed this doctrine, this idea known as standing. And unless both parties to a lawsuit have a particularized interest in its outcome, a federal court cannot weigh in and speak about the legal merits. So in this case, the question is whether the proponents of Proposition 8, the people who sponsored it for the ballot, whether they have any distinctive interest in whether Prop 8 remains valid or not, such that they can defend Prop 8 in court when the ordinary defenders of state law, that is the attorney general and the governor of a state, have decided not to defend Prop 8 in this federal court challenge.
Now, the judge in the trial, Judge Walker, I guess, did grant them standing, or were they just an intervener in the case? They did defend it the first time around in the trial. Why wouldn't they be allowed now?
Well, to be blunt, I don't think that the trial court really paid a whole lot of attention to the question of whether the proponents of Prop 8 had standing to defend the measure in the absence of the attorney general and the governor. It's true that they were allowed to intervene in the case, but intervening when there's already a governor and attorney general there who presumably will defend is different than standing to defend in the absence of those public defendants. So the short of it is the lower court didn't really focus on this issue as much as would have been ideal, and that's why when the case got to the Ninth Circuit saw the issue, but it didn't really have a good record on which to resolve the issue, which is why the Ninth Circuit's been thrashing around a little bit on this question, including what they've done now, which is to seek some input from the California Supreme Court.
Now, is there a difference between the state's interest? In other words, the attorney general and the governor are supposed to represent the state. They've declined in this instance to defend or to challenge the decision, Judge Walker's decision. But is there a difference between the state's interest and the voters' interest? In other words, the backers of Prop 8 say, hey, we're standing up for the voters because no one else will.
Ordinarily, in our government, we rely on our elected representatives to represent our interests as voters. In states like California, where you have a direct democracy device like the initiative, things are a little bit more complicated because the very presence of an initiative suggests a belief on the part of Californians that sometimes elected officials in both the legislative and or the executive branch can't always be counted on to vindicate what the people of California really want. So the Prop 8 defenders or proponents, they take the position that you kind of alluded to a moment ago, namely, if not us, then who? Should the voters of California pass a law that should be allowed to die on the vine because the elected representatives aren't doing the people's work? Now, I think that's a plausible argument. The problem with it is, though, that the voters of California who passed Prop 8 never explicitly deputized the backers of Prop 8 or the proponents of Prop 8 to speak on behalf of the people. Millions of people voted for Proposition 8 for all kinds of reasons, and the people who voted for Proposition 8 and made it law may not fully agree with the people who wrote and proposed Prop 8, and so the question is whether they are good representatives or good surrogates for the voters when the voters never really gave them that power in the text of Prop 8 itself. I think this would be a different and easier question if Proposition 8 itself had had a provision in it that said, in the event this proposition passes and is challenged in court and the attorney general and the governor do not defend, then the proponents of the measure who sponsored it for the ballot shall be authorized to defend in court. That would be a much easier case than the one we have now.
Well, boy, and they sure would have been prescient.
Well, you say that, but the same day that Prop 8 passed, there was a measure that passed that we're also dealing with. That was the California Redistricting Commission measure, and that initiative did have in it a provision that contemplated the possibility of a legal challenge and did empower the proponents of the measure to defend in court. So this is, on the one hand, this is like, you know, hindsight is 20/20, but this is not an issue that careful initiative thinkers could not have had on their mind.